Welcome to Double Fries No Slaw. It is May 26th. Maybe you're listening to this on the 27th. If so, happy Memorial Day. Hopefully you're having a good day, spending some time with some friends and family, remembering what's truly important about today. Richie, how's your weekend been so far? Long weekend.
Good. Yeah, I've worked an overnight on Thursday, so this is actually a four-day weekend for me. So I've been enjoying it, doing absolutely nothing but sitting on the couch, watching Netflix, movies, whatever you can say. It's been a great weekend, actually.
Yeah, we watched, my wife gets real patriotic. I mean, which you should, that's fine. I'm not, yeah. But we watched
Top Gun this morning.
We watched Top Gun Maverick last night. Yeah. So exactly. Right. It's just what you do, I guess. But, every year on the 4th of July, we've got to watch, we watch Hamilton, and that week we watch Jaws and all the things. So, yeah. No, but hey, do appreciate this holiday and what it means, and those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice so that we could sit here and talk crap about Florida State. And every Memorial Day I post a tweet thread about a former FSU student who our tennis courts are named after. You can go check that out. Actually, I'll link it in the description of the video. Some good stuff there. So appreciate. You know what the holiday means. Hopefully you guys are celebrating it well and safely. So Double Fries No Slaw, brought to you by Guthrie's in Tallahassee. You can visit all three of their locations: 1818 West Tennessee, 2550 North Monroe, and 1870 Appalachia Parkway. Appreciate them for their support. I almost said appreciate them for their service. I guess they do provide a service. So thank you, Guthrie's, for your service on this Memorial Day as well. So not the same kind of service, but it is what it is. Richie, we know Florida State's going to be really, really good this year. And even losing the talent they did last year, you know, there's thoughts around, oh, well, they're still ranked high, but is that just because they had a good year last year and you just kind of give them their flowers for having a good year? I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't think that's why they're in everybody's way too early top 25 rankings. I don't think that's why they're hovering around the top 10 when it comes to everyone's projections for next year. A lot of people think the Seminoles are still going to be very good, but polls are pretty meaningless. And yeah, we've talked about S&P Plus not necessarily being the end-all be-all for advanced analytics or advanced metrics or anything like that. But Florida State ranked really high again in S&P Plus, which was released late last week. The Noles come in at 12th. We'll talk about where some of their opponents are. But first, I want to get your take. Are you surprised by that at all, that Florida State could put 10 guys in the draft, have a couple more guys sign as undrafted free agents, and still be that close to the top of college football?
No, and I think that's where you want to be with Mike Norvell entering his, I believe, fifth season at this point. It's crazy he's been here that long. But, yeah, he's built a program. And, you know, people laughed at him for using the transfer portal so much early on. And now everybody understands you have to use the portal. Like Clemson, we'll talk about them in a second, but them not taking a single transfer is crazy to me. But, you know, he found out early, I don't have the players to compete right now. I need to hit the portal. And he did. And he did it in a way that nobody really else has done, other than maybe Lane Kiffin, who's also, I think he's top five or top eight, at least in the SP Plus, which we're going to talk about. But yeah, I think that is where Florida State is right now. And we're going to lose a lot of talented players next season. And I fully expect us to be in the top 10 to 15 entering the 2025 season. That's just where this program is right now. And as long as Mike is here, and thank goodness he turned down Alabama, I think we're in a good spot moving forward, TJ.
I appreciate you for that comment so that we can get the angry Alabama fans in the mentions down below. So if you have negative comments, please make sure you direct them at Richie's YouTube, not the channel's YouTube. No, I'm just kidding. We'll take all the hate. No, I agree. As much as there's different takes on, oh, Mike's recruiting, or is it good enough, or is this elite enough, where can we be? Like, the one thing I will say about Mike Norvell is I think he's always going to recruit worst case around 10th to 12th to 15th. Like, he's going to recruit in the top 10% of college football. Is he going to recruit like Georgia? Probably not. But to be fair, nobody else is recruiting like Georgia either. He's always going to recruit around that top 10 You're going to have some years that are slightly better, some years that are slightly worse. He's always going to have like a top five portal class, and those are like ready-made guys that are ready to play for you immediately. And then he's always going to develop guys better. When I sat down with him in Tampa just last week, a week ago today, he said, we lean a little heavier development. Like we lean a little closer on the development side, and we're going to be more development focused. And he mentioned taking guys from other places, Trey Benson under Mario, who did nothing, and then turning them into RB2 in the NFL draft. And so, yeah, I think that's always, and if you do those three things, if you recruit about top 10, if you have a top five portal class of ready-made guys, and you develop just as well as anybody else in the country, if not better, you're going to have a playoff roster just about every year, right? I'm not going to say that, oh, you have to make the playoffs every single year or you got to get out, but I do think you're probably competing for the playoffs, three out of every 5 years. Like if you made the playoffs, you're eventually going to want to win, right? Like the standard is excellence. It is to win a championship. But if you're making the playoffs 60% of the time, 3 out of every 5 years, and you're getting left out like those other years at like 9-3 or have an occasional 8-4 season, but then the other 3 years you're going playoffs and then won 9-3, like I'd take that 5 year span. Because no one else in the country is, I mean, there are some teams in the country, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, I get it. But most teams are not doing that with that consistency. And I think that's where Mike Norvell is going to keep Florida State pretty consistently at this point. So, Richie, other teams ahead of Florida State in S&P Plus? Well, there's just one. Notre Dame at 10th. Does it surprise you that nobody else is ahead of FSU?
I love Conley's Bill Conley. He does a great job, in my opinion, with the SP Plus. I think he, tries to take all bias out of it, and it just sticks strictly to the metrics. And I think that's a big deal. I'm a little surprised Notre Dame's ahead of Florida State, to be honest. I thought Clemson might have been, even Miami, which they're not either. But yeah, that Notre Dame game, I think that's a huge game. Notre Dame at 10th in the SP Plus. I'm really excited to see that game. I don't want to commit to going to that game, but I would love to go back to Chicago and take the bus over to South Bend, because that was such a fun time, even though we got blown out back when Willie was the head coach. But yeah, man, Notre Dame being 10th is a little surprising to me. I'm never a huge believer in Notre Dame. I just, for whatever reason, when they played Alabama in the national title game with Everett Golson as a quarterback, I don't think I bet on that game, but if I did, I would have bet heavy on Alabama. It wasn't competitive. Not at all. So Notre Dame being so high is a little tricky to me, because on the road in November at supposedly our toughest team by the SP Plus, I don't think that's our toughest game. I think Miami's our toughest game. So we'll see.
Yeah, Notre Dame's interesting. I talked with Joe DeLeon of the Ruffino and Joe show on the national channel, College Football Addiction. If you're not subscribed there, go check it out. But I talked with him about Notre Dame, and I asked specifically about Riley Leonard and his health. And Riley's missed some time here in spring, and yeah, I'd expect him to be back and pretty close to 100% by fall, right? Like, that's the hope is that he is back. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you in May 26th that like, oh man, I hope he's not 100% when we play Notre Dame so that we get an easy win. Like, I don't really care that much cheer. And also, like, if that's what you're hoping for in May for a November game, like whatever, man, like
what are we doing?
I'm not at all hope, but like, if he's not ready, like if he's not, like, it all rides on him. And I think the expectation at Notre Dame is that he's going to be a little bit better than I think he's going to be. Like, Riley Leonard was not bad at all, but like, I think the thought is that he's going to be like this program changer, not program changer, because obviously Notre Dame's a great program, but like this just game changer that just does miraculous, like Teddy Bridgewater at Louisville, right? Like, I think that's what the thought almost is that he's going to be. And I don't know. I don't see it. Was he banged up against us? Yes. Did him going out make a difference? Yes. I mean, I do think it did. Now, I think Florida State wins that game either way. I don't think Riley Leonard was doing anything spectacular that we couldn't have handled. If he's 100% healthy, is that game a little bit different? Maybe. We were struggling as it started. Anyway, most of that was because of what we were making mistakes doing, throwing a pick six and other things. But I don't know. Notre Dame, again, we talked about this last week, Richie. They don't worry me a ton. I will say, I think S&P Plus has the top three games, pretty well locked in. Clemson at 14th, Miami at 19th. Home and away, how does that factor in? It doesn't to S&P Plus, but like, how does that factor into like how difficult something is? But your top three games, you could put them in any order, right? You've got Miami there. I probably still have Clemson at the top of this. And then, I don't know, at Notre Dame, at Miami, I feel like the rivalries may be slightly more challenging. But if Notre Dame is firing on all cylinders, I think we'll have a better idea when we get to November of which one of those two is going to be tougher. They may both be incredibly tough. I guess Miami's in late October. But have the top three all within the top 20, Miami 19th, Clemson 14th, and Notre Dame 10th. And then you start to get to some of the other teams. You know, I have long said that this schedule had eight games you needed to win on it, and then a four games that you at worst need to go 2-2 in. Have I been saying the fourth team incorrectly the whole time? Because this has SMU at 23rd and Florida at 33rd. Now, I know that's only, what, 10% difference when there's 130 teams. It might be like 12% different, you know, or a little bit less, 8% difference when there's 130 teams. But I've been thinking that Florida was going to be our fourth toughest game. Conley says at SMU might be a little bit tougher.
Yeah, and I think I said on the show, TJ, that SMU is the one game that kind of sticks out to me in Dallas. I think that's going to be a really tough game. I think they had the fourth or fifth best odds to win the ACC and what the odds that just came out this week. Yeah, I think SMU is going to be a very difficult game, and I'm not surprised to see them in the top 25, and I would not be surprised to see them in the top 25 when we travel to Dallas to play them in you know, September. I do think that's going to be a very tough game. Florida doesn't scare me. I truly think by the time we play Florida, you know, I don't know if Billy Napier will still have a job at the time. We'll see. It'll be interesting, but their schedule is brutal, and especially the back half. They better stack some wins early on, because in the back end, when they play Georgia, LSU, Florida State, whoever else, I mean, my goodness, it is ridiculous. But yeah, I do think SMU is the trickiest game on the schedule. Not the toughest, but one that we definitely need to bring our A game for, because that's a game you could lose, and it's not a game you can afford to lose.
Yeah, I like the way the schedule sets up for us before we play SMU. Yeah. You know, what is it? Memphis, Georgia Tech, BC before that. It's Cal before it too. But I like playing, you know, worse teams to kind of get up and rolling, right? Like teams you should pretty definitively be better than. The one thing about S&P that I don't know how well it factors in, and I am speaking from complete ignorance. So if somebody's kind of an S&P or an advanced analytics person, like feel free to jump in and correct me here. But what I do wonder is how well it measures trench play. Because like Memphis is 39th and SMU is 23rd, but like do their offense and defensive lines, like can they really, like, because to me, as tricky of a game as SMU could be, like if Florida State can dominate up front in the trenches, they should be able to get away with that, right? Memphis is a good team too, but if Florida State can dominate up front, so I don't know how well S&P Plus factors that in, or maybe they do a phenomenal job of it. I really just have no idea, right? But that is something that maybe sticks out to me or makes me think like, okay, well, where does Florida State have an advantage? Well, they should have an advantage over both those teams in a lot of places, but nowhere more than where they've done a good job of developing and recruiting on the offense and defensive lines. And if they can kind of bully teams that they're expected to bully, they should be okay. I agree though on Florida. Like I will say this. I think Florida will be a better team this year than they were last year. And I think that Graham Mertz was obviously better than everyone expected. And I think he's an average to above average quarterback. Now, I think a lot of his stuff is just very easy completions, just very dump off friendly. Did you see the tweet this week where the Florida fan was like, they say all Eugene Wilson does is catch bubble passes. And then he put like a 9-minute highlight, and like 7 minutes of the highlights were just bubble screens and handoffs and like reverses and stuff. There were like three passes downfield. And I was just like, I don't know that you quite proved what you were trying to prove here. But Florida at the end of the day just doesn't worry me. I think defensively they're still a nightmare. They're still a mess. I think their offense and defensive lines are going to be terrible.
I think they'll quit by the time we play them.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't quit, especially if they fire Napier and like they're playing for like the interim coach or whatever. Like you always see teams kind of get up for that. Not that they think that would be the guy that leads them going forward, but it wouldn't surprise me if they don't actually quit, because I feel like even when teams have quit before, like they get up for the rivalry game. I think about when Mullen got fired and they nearly lost to Sanford or something the week before they played us, and then they ended up hung 50 on them.
The best onside kick attempt I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Sanford almost beat them, and then they still beat us. Like, they still, I think even if they have quit, like, they'll still get up for the rivalry game. But they just don't worry me at all. Like,
yeah, especially in Tallahassee.
If Florida State, I'll say this, if I think 9-3 is a little, is probably below expectations, right? You should win 10 games this year. You know, your Vegas over under is 9.5. Everywhere, but if you don't win at least 9, I think there's a question of like, okay, well, what happened, right? Did somebody major get hurt? Did you have like 3 fluke things go off at once? Like what happened where you couldn't get to 9 wins? Like you know some of these other teams, again, Memphis at 39th, Duke at 47th, the rest of these teams 50 or below, UNC 50, Cal 52, Georgia Tech 63, Boston College 75. To me, those are inexcusable losses.
Yeah.
Like if you were to somehow drop, if you were to drop a game to SMU or Florida, but then you beat like Miami and Notre Dame, you lose to Clemson, and you go 10-2 that way, like losing a game you're not supposed to lose is, I don't want to say it's okay, but like that makes sense.
It happens
like,
every year. Yeah. Happens every year to 99% of schools in the country.
Most teams drop a game they're just not happens. Supposed to. Yeah. Right. But then you go out and win a game. You're either not supposed to, or a 50-50 game. You know, like if you lose to Notre Dame, but you beat Clemson and Miami and you lose at SMU, well, then you're still going to Charlotte with a chance to go to the playoff, you know? And so, I don't know. There's a lot of metric. There's a lot of polls out there, like way too early rankings, way too early preseason polls, way too early. Here's who I think is going to be good. Here's not. This is really the first like metric we've gotten that says, no, Florida State should still be a really good team. As far as the ACC goes, they're the best in the ACC. They should go out and win the ACC this year. Now, it's close. Like, Clemson's 14th, Florida State at 12th. This isn't like some huge gap. But at the end of the day, Florida State's got a little more talent than anybody right now. They're a little bit better of a team than anybody else in the ACC. We'll see how things are adjusted. But as of right now, you should win 10 or 11 games based on this coming out this week.
Yeah, I think, TJ, it's Charlotte or bust, right? If you do not get to Charlotte, I think the season is a failure. And that's a great place to be, because that's not where we have been the past, 5, 6, 7 years or so. Just thinking of the thought that if we do not get to Charlotte, this season was a bust. That's a great place to be. Miami's been in this league for 20 years now and been to Charlotte once and kicked a field goal from their own 3-yard line. Like that's where we are. And we're now to a point where Florida State, I truly believe it's Charlotte or bust. And I love that I have family in Charlotte, and it gives me a reason to take an early Christmas up there and see my nieces. And I just love it. And I do think, you can drop a game. I don't think we'll see a year like last year with a team like Louisville, who just had one conference loss, who made the conference championship game. It's probably going to be mostly 2-loss teams. And I think it comes down to Florida State, Clemson, and Miami. That's what I see it coming down to. But I do expect Florida State to be in Charlotte.
Yeah, no, I agree. The only caveat I would have to it being a bust if you didn't make it is if you lose to Clemson, win the rest of your games, and somebody else goes undefeated. To have Clemson.
No, that's
like
fair.
If you go 11-1, really specific scenario.
You're probably in the playoffs still if that's
At that point, who cares, right? You just get a bye week that week. Who cares about winning another ACC? And what might be our final one? Hey, I did a video this week on Mike Norvell's opening press conference, and everything he said in that press conference that has now come to pass 4.5 years ago. If you missed that, click the video on the screen right now to check it out. Richie, there are some rumors swirling that some big, big money is coming to college football. Of course, a Noel, Drew Rutherford, at the forefront of it. But thoughts on, and we'll jump into this pretty deep and talk about what it could mean for the sport and for Florida State specifically, but thoughts on big money, private equity coming to college football? I was asked about this, and so I already have a take, but I'm kind of interested if we agree or disagree on this in general?
Kind of mixed feelings. Like I do, you know, Florida State needs the money, obviously, right now, trying to get out of the ACC. But I don't like the idea. It's almost like, you know, signing up for a credit card with 30% interest rate or something, because you are kind of owned at that point by whatever firm you go with. And, you know, we joke about the Saudi Knolls and all that. And, you know, we talk about LIV Golf, and it's if we have to do it, I'm all for it. Like if that's the only step to move forward to get to one of the Power Two conferences, then I'm all for it. But man, I hope that's a last line of resort, like the last possible option. But I think it very well could come to that. And I think Drew Weatherford is on board. He's on the board of trustees. And I think that's a very real option for Florida State. You know, again, I'm on board if that's all we have, but ideally I'd like to avoid that.
So does it make you feel, I mean, you talk about what it means for Florida State specifically and like trying to get to the Power Two and all that. Does it make you feel a little bit better if like the reports are that some of these private equity firms or the private equity firm that may kind of undertake some of this has met with like 50 different schools. And so it's not just an FSU's looking into this thing. Like, it sounds like some of the top brands and a lot of the top schools in college football may be open to this. Does it make you feel a little bit better that we wouldn't be going it alone, maybe?
Yeah, I hate what's that meme? The worst person you know made a great point. Like, I hate to give credit to Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times, but he kind of broke the story that Drew Weatherford has kind of met with like 50 plus ADs in secret that nobody knew about until the story broke last week. But yeah, that does make me feel a lot better. If that's the way college football as a whole is going, you know, it might not be the greatest thing, but let's go for it. Let's do it. I'm on board. But yeah, if Florida State was the only one doing it, I would definitely not be happy about it. But it does sound, to your point, TJ, that a lot of schools are seriously considering this, and I'm all in. Like, whatever it takes for Florida State to remain competitive in football, that's all I care about.
Yeah, I wonder so much, like, you think about, I mean, there's, so if I take like a 100% like silver lining positive look at this, and I say like, man, the sport is changing and differently than we've ever seen it. And, you know, and to go to your point, right, like if I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate with you and say like, oh, well, the private equity like kind of owns you at that point, and, you know, is this a good move long term? What does it do for the actual sport? I think there have been a lot of people that have kind of like owned college football for a long time, and they've been the ones to collect in all the revenue and the money, and, you know, like the NCAA and these conference commissioners and these folks at these universities, and it just, there's been a lot of money that stayed in the good old boys circle, you know? And, and I think our sport from an organizational level, I don't necessarily mean what happens on Saturday, but I do think our sport, like kind of high level, is broken. And if you don't agree with that, then whatever. But we have pay for play now. We have legalized pay for play. We have you know, a transfer portal that is an absolute disaster. You know, we coaching salaries like through the roof and just absurd the way that they've skyrocketed the last several years. And, you know, we're about to get to a point where we're paying players, which is great. Like, I don't have any problem with that. But, you know, you look at the private equity, that the money that it may bring in and the marketing and growth that could take place with it. Some of these guys have worked in professional sports and seen tremendous growth in professional sports. Would it be possible, and I don't mean the actual game, right? Like what happens on Saturdays, but would it be possible for some of this money that's injected to help our sport rise and have better leadership behind it than what college football has had forever, right? And you know, people get so scared of like, oh, what if this looks like the NFL, or what if this is just NFL 2.0? I don't really worry about that as much, but I will say the NFL is the most successful sports league in the world. And so like, what if it is NFL 2.0? Great. We will have good leadership that does things the right way and doesn't screw over student athletes. And so good, you know, like I obviously want the game on Saturday to remain our game, But like, if the NFL model is what we go to, or the way that the NFL runs things, good. It will be effective, and we will get rid of this dumb good old boys crap that we've got going on now. Now, I like college football more than I like the NFL, right? And so that's fine. But I don't want the actual game to change. But like, the leadership has sucked for a long time. The people that the money have gone to have sucked for a long time. And so that's kind of where I look at it and say, yeah, could it ruin things? I mean, I guess, but is the sport not already ruined? Like, it, yeah. You know, is it not at least worth trying something new? So I don't know. Yeah. If it's just FSU on, but I agree with you. If it's just FSU on their own somewhat, that does that worry me? Yes. If it's everybody going to it, and this is just kind of like the new way of the world's in the sport, I think I'm pretty good with it.
Yeah. And to your point, TJ, the sport, like, we have a guy that committed to Miami, committed to Florida, signed with Arizona State, transferred to Georgia, and is now suing Florida's coach. Like, this is just a crazy world that we're in terms of college football. And I don't think this will be the first situation. And I, as much as I love to troll Florida fans, you know, this is going to continue to happen. And it's, you know, this is the world we live in. And either you love it, you love college football enough to where you can put up with all this BS, or you just can't deal with it and you get out. And that's cool too. Like, I understand it. I love this sport way too much. And it was my first love. I will watch it regardless, no matter how many circus events we have. And I feel like we have a lot more to come in the future.
I will say, I am glad that UF seems to be in the middle of every bit of drama and every circus event. And, I've given my thoughts on that on different shows, but yeah, it's hilarious to watch them be in the middle of it. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know where this ultimately lands. I don't know what ends up happening with it. Obviously, if FSU was to have some of that money, you know, how does that free some things up? Are they able to expedite some, do they have a little bit more wiggle room, right? Like, I don't necessarily know that it like speeds anything up incredibly. Maybe that's the kind of debt you take on to get you out to once you settle, right? If you settle for $150 million or $200 million, like, maybe that's the way that you just kind of pay it off pretty quickly. I would think you could pay that off fairly quickly in the, once you're in a new conference, just based on the gap of revenue that you're making. But yeah, maybe you structure it out to a way where you pay it off over 30 years and you know, it's not as big of a hit to the bottom line. But I don't know, man.
ACC will not be around in 30 years.
Oh, no. If you took the money from private equity to pay off the ACC right away, you'd have to pay them back. And so
hopefully Drew Weatherford has been in contact with Bruce Koepka, because he took that money and he's doing all right.
You would think that Drew could cut us a little bit of a break, right? Like, give everybody else like a terrible interest rate and hook us up pretty good, right? Like, wouldn't that
give me 4.5%? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Drew.
Yeah. Give us a pre-inflation house mortgage rate. So we'll see. Speaking on the ACC, I chatted with Doug Rohan this week. If you didn't catch all the updates there, do me a favor and click on the screen right now to check those out. If you're listening on podcast only, you can go to YouTube, go to our channel. There is an update with Doug Rohan of Rohan Law about Florida State refiling their lawsuit in Tallahassee. Make sure that you go check that out if you haven't already. Subscribe on the YouTube channel if you're not already. All right, let's do a quick around the horn, Richie, and then we'll get out of here. Softball drops a couple to Oklahoma. McKenna Reed pitched in the final game. She had some stress fractures in her back and still went out there and pitched. For a couple of innings, she was really good, kept it close, held Oklahoma down in the second game. Florida State got blown out of the first game, but then the second game, they went out there and really battled, just couldn't do it quite enough. They lost 4-2. They did have a home run robbed. That would have made it, at the time, it would have been 4-2, and then 4-3, they hit another one right after. So would have made the game 4-3. Then maybe you have a chance late if you're not down a couple. But a tough draw having to go to Oklahoma for your super regional matchup, but a good year overall. You know, probably not up to the expectations of the program, but a good year to go out and win a regional, finish second in the ACC. And if you'd have run into just about anybody else in the supers, you probably would have had a chance to get to Columbus City. But it was a kind of a death a Death March staff to go up there and do that. First game got kind of blown out. Second game, they did compete really hard. They did really well. You hold Oklahoma to 4. You hope that's enough. And the offense just couldn't get enough going. Devin Flaherty, Kaylee Harding, Kaylee Mudge, Allison Royalty, Autumn Belvi, and Emma Wilson, your seniors, that will move on. I do think they'll reload. I think they'll be back and a little bit better next year. And
yeah.
I think Oklahoma City will be the expectation at that point. Men's tennis, their doubles pair finishes as the national runner-up, farthest they've ever made it in program history. Baseball went 3-1 this week at the ACC tournament. They made the championship game. Not a great result there. Took the loss in pretty embarrassing fashion, but did enough this week with 2 quad one wins, a quad two win, and then obviously the quad one loss today to probably get a top 8 seed. Some projections have them as the 7 seed. I've seen different projections that either have LSU or UF coming to town for the regional. I saw one projection that had neither of those two teams, which would be great for the Noles. LSU may be the hottest team in college baseball right now. And then Florida, who you beat their heads in 3 times as your rival coming to town, would be annoying to have to take them on again, because beating a team 4 and then maybe 5 times in a season seems daunting. But, you know, hey, if you're the host, you need to find a way to win no matter who comes into town. In the regional, a good year for them, a heck of a turnaround. Somehow Link Jarrett wasn't the ACC Coach of the Year. I think that somehow is probably because the Noles are suing the ACC right now, and so they didn't vote him as the Coach of the Year. So nobody pays me to not say bad things about the ACC. And then men's golf is in 3rd right now, Richie, at the National Championships. Need to be top 15 to move on to tomorrow. Seems very likely that they will. They need a bunch of teams to go berserk at the end to not finish there. And then I think tomorrow they'll play again. They need to stay within the top 8 to qualify for match play, which would start again then the next day. So I guess Tuesday. If they can maintain top 8 through today and tomorrow, they'll move on to match play. And then you need to win 3 days to win the national championship. They finished 3rd last year. Women's golf finished in the top 15. At the NCAA championships as well. Richie, any shout outs before we get out of here?
Yeah, real quick, not to, bring things down, but, Grayson Murray at PGA Tour Pro at 30 years old, took his own life. 988 is the suicide hotline. And, you never know what someone's going through. And, it was shocking news to me. I've been a fan of his and just hated to see that, hated this statement that his family put out, but prayers to Grayson Murray's family and everyone who's dealing with that. But again, you don't know what's going on with people in your life, so just try and keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, sad, really sad news, and awful to hear about this morning, and yeah, just absolutely brutal. Again, appreciate the service for all those, everybody's service, but especially those who paid the ultimate sacrifice so that we could be free and celebrate Memorial Day the way we want to and have a bunch of fun talking about the Noles and all those things. So appreciate those that we're celebrating today and want to always remember that on holidays like this. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys soon. Go Noles.